to Iris FM, Scotland's social services podcast.
Hello and welcome to Freshly Squeezed, an Iris podcast which aims to squeeze information and inspiration from key influencers and social services in Scotland. Today I'm speaking to David Williams. David qualified as a social worker in 1988 and worked for 2 years in Easter House and then for 7 years in Drumchapel as a social worker and senior social worker. He moved to the children's charity NCH in 1997 as service manager to set up and run a range of integrated children and family services in the Moray Council area until 2004. In 2005, David moved to the post of service director at Quarriers, where he remained until returning to Glasgow as assistant director of social work services in June 2009, becoming executive director of social care services in December 2012 and chief officer designate for Glasgow City Health and Social Care Partnership in July 2014. David was appointed formally to the chief officer position by Glasgow City Integration Joint Board at its first meeting on 8th of February 2016. David, welcome to Freshly Squeezed.
Thank you.
And happy Social Work Day today. World Social Work Day, isn't it?
Absolutely. Something to celebrate.
Absolutely. And you've had quite a career in social work, so it's probably a very apt day to do some celebrating. Tell me, did you always want to work in social services?
Not at all. If I went back to my early 20s, I was 23 before I knew what social work actually was.
Okay.
So, but I guess one of the tendencies and characteristics of learning to be a social worker and becoming a social worker is that whole thing around reflection and reflecting on what brings you to a certain place in your life that you actually start doing things. So if I was to reflect back to my childhood and my adolescence and growing up in a small village in the west coast of Wales, there were probably things that happened throughout my my childhood and formative years that brought me into a place where I was ready to learn to understand issues of equalities and issues of social justice and issues of actually just being a giving kind of person, if you like. So just to give you a couple of examples, if we went back to 1971-72, at the time of the expulsions from Uganda under Idi Amin, we had the place that I grew up in had a former army camp that had been disused for a good 10 years before that. It was reopened and we had about 6,000 or 7,000 Ugandan Asian refugees come and stay and swamp the village, and you suddenly have no choice but to learn a little bit at the age of whatever I was before my teenage years at that point, and try and understand what was happening to my community. Mm-hmm. And to learn, so you become a bit more, what I've reflected on later is I probably had become a lot more self-aware of other people's circumstances. One of the things that my parents were always involved in was charity work. We did jumble sales, as they used to be called, pretty much every other Saturday morning of our childhood. It was something that involved doing something that was about giving. My mother was a community organiser of the WRVS, as it was in those days. Yeah. And had a remit for going over all of North Wales, organising things for people, and we got involved in that. I've got a twin sister. We didn't really have much choice, but those things, just about what my parents were involved in, mm-hmm. was formative in relation to understanding that place that allowed me to open my mind to other things once I'd left university.
Uh-huh. And what did you study at university then? What was it, social work itself?
Or? Not at all, no. I did modern history and economic history as a joint degree. I came up to Glasgow to do my undergraduate studies. And don't get me wrong, a large part, again, that reflection, that those early years experiences focused my mind in terms of my particular interest within history. So within the modern history part of my degree, I focused a lot on the American South leading up to the Civil War and the years before that and subsequent. And within the economic history side of the business, a lot of focus on migration, emigration and urbanisation, and what happened in the development of urban environments through the course of particularly the 19th century and what that impacted and how that impacted on people.
So how did you move then from doing history into social work then?
Well, a big part of that was I had no idea at all what I wanted to do with my life when I was in the last year of university. The only two things I did understand and appreciate was that I didn't want to spend my life wearing a suit, and for the purposes of this broadcast, I am wearing a suit, and nor did I want to sit behind a desk for the rest of my working life. And in fairness, I've always strived not to do that, and so my desk, as you can see, I don't sit behind it. It's pushed up against the wall there. And I've always believed, actually, that's just about being of open and available through my management career. There's a barrier that comes across with a desk, and I've always felt that. When I graduated, I had been living in a flat with three other guys for the last 2 years of my university degree, and two of us, my colleague friend Paul Hart, neither of us knew what we wanted to do. We signed up to do what's called CSV, Community Service Volunteers,
right.
In the mid 1980s, and in those days you could volunteer full time for a whole year and have your brew money and your housing benefit paid for you, and so of course that allowed us. So Paul went off to do work in a special needs school in South Lanarkshire at the time for a year. Yeah, and I went off to work in social group work in Clyde Bank, doing things like working with young people who were on the edges of getting into real difficulty in the children's panel system. Didn't know what the children's panel system was at that point, of course. A lot of detached street work. So we used to go out of an evening every week into the more challenging parts of Clyde Bank, as it was then, and work with young people who were just hanging around and try and bring them into. And I was fortunate enough to be based physically within the social work department in Clyde Bank at that time, and so came across social workers and worked alongside them, talked to them. I guess I probably felt at home in the company of social work people.
Very inspiring, I'd imagine, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And none of them wore suits, and none of them sat behind desks. And I thought, I could live with this. And so I began to explore the notion of going on to do a postgraduate diploma in social work, and was successful enough to get accepted to the course at Stirling University, as it was at that point. When I graduated and went to work in Easterhouse for a couple of years, and then on to Drumchapel, I have to say, my mother, bless her, living in Wales at the time, knew even less about social work than I did, but had grown up in, she was from Caithness in Sutherland, had grown up in Glasgow during the 1930s and 40s, so had always had a level of awareness of what happened in Glasgow, and did wonder why I picked Easterhouse to start my social work career. I have to say, and I said to her at the time, I didn't really have much choice. You went for a kind of mass selection interview, which lasted about 20 minutes, and you were in the door, and they allocated you to somewhere.
Wow, so right in at the deep end.
Right in at the deep end, yeah. I went off to do my child abuse training course, and as it was in those days, literally two days into the job. Partly because the area team at that point was allocated a set number of places on the regional council's child abuse training course, and at that point, when I came in to work in Easterhouse, everybody who was a social worker who worked in Easterhouse at that time had already done the course, so the area manager didn't really want to lose that place and put me on the training course 2 days after I started. For the purposes of the microphone, you haven't seen the face I've just pulled in terms of how not to do that now.
Fantastic. Okay. You moved on to NCH, was that Now Action for Children?
It's Now Action for Children,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then into Quarriers. So yeah. Quite a mixed range of experiences then you've got.
Absolutely, yeah. Uh-huh. But all of them great experiences, I have to say. I mean, and I guess one of the things that I've always believed as a guiding principle for me is to always strive to be just slightly outside or substantially outside your comfort zone in terms of what I do. So I moving from the security of local government, if you like. At a point when, with the disaggregation of local authorities anyway, so there was a lot of opportunities and a lot of change happening. And don't get me wrong, I felt at that point in my career, I would have quite liked to have been part of that story. By now, I would be achieving long service awards for staying if I had been successful. but the particular job in Murray within NCH came up, and I just thought it was the right job for me. I had no idea where Murray was at all, because it was the disaggregation of the local authorities. So it was a part of the old Grampian, and it's still a relatively modest sized local authority area, but had seven really, really rewarding years up there. Not all of it easy, but it was rewarding. Mm. Always put me into that place where, outside of my comfort zone. So a part of the services that we picked up on was that I picked up on and led on was the management of children's homes. And that was a new experience for me, because I hadn't worked in children's homes at that point in time. But it struck me that actually the point of delivering really good quality residential childcare was just about good quality social work practice, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm. And then you returned to Glasgow,
yep.
and have since had a number of positions then.
I got the assistant director's job at a point when, I'd been at Quarries for 4 years as a service director. The opportunity came, it was a relatively speculative application at one level, and I was successful. But it was a politically appointed role because of the scale of service provision within the social work department in Glasgow. And so when the director's post became available, it wouldn't have been the right message to have sent to have not considered it, even though it was probably not something I anticipated or expected when I joined in 2009. At that stage, yeah. within 3 years, my predecessor, David Crawford, former director of social work here, former president of the ADSW, took retirement at a point when none of us really expected it. And it would have sent the wrong message if I hadn't wanted to reflect that continuity that he and I had achieved in social work services over the 3.5 years mm-hmm. before he finished.
You're a very motivated individual.
Yes.
Can you tell me, in terms of those motivations, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
What's always got me out of bed, I guess, throughout my career has been the notion that I'm first and foremost see myself as a public servant. I'm here to serve the public. I see myself as a social worker second to that. But first and foremost, every penny that I've ever earned, whether it's been in the public sector or in the voluntary sector, has been public money. So there is something about public service in that. And one of the things we worked hard on in the development of the Health and Social Care Partnership in Glasgow and the integration arrangements here three to 4 years ago was to develop a vision statement for the IJB. And ours has three sentences, and none of us can remember what those three sentences are. But I've always stressed the one word in each of the sentences that I ask people as the chief officer not to lose sight of. So in the first sentence, we have the word flourish, which is essentially surrounded by words that amount to we are here to support the people of this city to flourish. And the second word is the word transform, because actually that's the whole point of integration, is to mm-hmm. transform health and social care services. And the third word is community, because in the third sentence it's something about not losing sight of the importance of community in how we do our business. Mm-hmm. But coming back to the word flourish, if we're not here in the city within health and care services to try and ensure that every citizen in the city is able to flourish to the best of their abilities, and then I don't know what else gets us out of bed. Mm-hmm. It's as material as that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not an easy process, I don't think, the whole integration of health and social care.
No. Yeah. That's that thing about putting yourself into outside of your comfort zone.
Sure.
It's a continuous challenge, but it's an enjoyable challenge mm-hmm. Because it is stimulating.
Right. You like to be out of your comfort zone then, day to day. So what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, I think my guess is that you probably, in all of these podcasts, would imagine, have pretty much the same responses you'll get from me, which is that there's no such thing as a typical day. You know, and that's the joy. We strive to ensure that we do a lot less urgent in our work and a lot more planned. And important, because if we do more important and planned work, then we'll probably have a lot less urgent to do. We're a very reactive, crisis-ridden business in health and social care, so we try and do a lot more that's planned. But even within that, every day is completely different. Just because of in Glasgow is the scale of what and the complexity and the multi-layered and multifaceted arrangements that we have in the city, every day is different. There's no typical day other than it's busy. It's intellectually stimulating, it's enjoyable. Some of it can be really, really difficult. Some of it does leave you questioning, what am I doing this for? Sure. But actually then you just come back to basics when on the journey home, that reflection process. What did I achieve today? What gets me out of bed is knowing that actually someone somewhere in the city that I've got responsibility for in terms of management on a health or social care side of the business is doing something really important to make a material difference in people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it comes back to the vision around making Glasgow flourish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you got a motto for life, David?
Probably that don't get stuck. Don't ever, rest on your laurels. Don't be complacent. Always look for that place outside your comfort zone, because that, and I suppose there is something about recognising that actually the people that we support, whether on a health or social care side of the business, are at a particular point in their lives where they're facing change and they're facing maybe a personal crisis or whatever. So, they're having to be in a place of being able to deal with whatever comes across them. And I think if we're not able to empathise with the need to change and the need to adapt how lives are lived or whatever, then I think that we're not able to empathise, and that makes it difficult for us to do that job. I make no bones about the fact that growing up in a sheltered small village in the west coast of Wales, where I knew nothing about what social work was all about until I was 23, I can't claim to have had the life experiences of many people that we support. So, but I have to be able to empathise. I have to be able to understand. So that requires me, it seems, to kind of question myself, to put myself into places of challenge so that I've got some degree of understanding. And also that reflection of what are the things that we all experience. So we all experience the ageing process. We all experience the fact that our parents will move on from this life in some way, shape or form. And what is it that we can do to support that? Many of us will have the experience of being parents and bringing up children and trying to do the best that we can do. So how do we reflect on all of those experiences and not bring our values to bear on the lives of people who have different, so there is something about just putting myself in a place of challenge.
Sure. Great, okay, thank you. And do you have a book or blog that you'd recommend to listeners?
Absolutely fantastic book that I read not that long ago, about 2 or 3 weeks, called Small Great Things. And I guess if folk just Google Small Great Things, they'll get a book title come up and who the author is. And inspiring, incredibly challenging book personally, and everybody will find it challenging personally. The story essentially is around a midwife who's not white, working in a very dominant white hospital in a city in America, and is asked to support a couple who've just had a baby who are white supremacists, and explicitly take the view that the nurse should not attend to their baby in any way, shape or form.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so the nurse leader agrees to that and puts a wee note in the case file, say no Afro-American personnel to attend to this baby, and of course things go wrong for the baby. And so there's a whole story there that really challenges the reader's value base and perceptions, and actually how we take so much in life for granted because of our experiences. So fantastic and completely inspiring story.
Brilliant. Sounds like it really
thoroughly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
I'm not getting any royalties for that, by the way.
Great. Okay. Do you like music, David? And do you have music for motivation?
Not particularly for motivation. I love music and I listen to all sorts of genres of music. I do sing in a male voice choir. That's not to say I am able to sing. The benefits of singing in a male voice choir is that you have about 45 other voices around you, so you can't be found out that easily. But 7 years on, they haven't actually told me that I can't sing yet, so that's reassuring. But there is a great joy in music. Again, I don't read music. I've never sung. I'd never sung before in any kind of way, shape or form in a public way prior to joining the choir. We do now gigs twice a year to collectively about 600 people over a couple of nights.
Okay.
So that's a big deal. That puts me right out of my comfort zone. And one of the things that, one of the reasons I did that was just about that work-life balance thing of being able to do something that actually requires a commitment. So I go to rehearsals every Tuesday evening when I as much as I miss probably one or two a year, and you need that constancy, that discipline to be able to do something. And if it's something that you're not used to doing, and so I've not sung, don't read music, then that challenges me to completely lose sight of whatever my day has been.
Yeah,
about.
It's quite therapeutic, I'd imagine.
Oh, unbelievably so. And actually, one of the things I'm pretty conscious of is the importance of things like that are pretty organic, because we tend to take a fairly paternalistic view of the needs of people within our business, health and social care, and public sector. We must be doing things for people to support them. So, but the choir actually functions as a bit like the men's shed type of idea.
Sure.
But there's not a single kind of connection to any public body in any way, shape or form with the choir. And you might think, oh, that sounds like a really kind of relatively middle class type thing to do, well to do, all of these kinds of things, except the last guy that joined us was just recently retired as a school janitor. It's a complete social mix. When I joined the choir 7 years ago, I immediately reduced the average age of the choir by about 20 years. That average age has kind of squeezed a little bit just because I've got older, obviously, and some of the older guys are no longer singing. But three of the guys lost their wives over the last year, and they were back with the choir about a week later because there was that sucker that came out from being part of something that older guys who'd maybe been through that process that lost at an earlier point were able to not shy away from the important conversations that helped these guys to work through.
That's the same principle as the men's shed, as you say.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely. And some of the guys, so there's all sorts of social things happen. I don't get the time to involve myself in that, but there's all sorts of social things happen amongst much older guys than me. Much older guys than me. that's really important for them on their day-to-day lives.
And is it contemporary music, pop music?
We sing anything from the Beach Boys to Beethoven.
Yeah, well, so it's quite
our musical director, a guy called Brian Marshall, who actually runs his own business and does some community group singing with folk down in Western Berkshire who have Alzheimer's. And does work with Alzheimer's Scotland and that bit of the business. He just loves music, sees the therapeutic importance of it, and he kind of continuously comes across in the message that we will never be world beaters as a competitive choir.
Sure.
We're pretty good, even though I say so myself as a non-musical person, but we just strive to entertain.
And do you have a go-to music or artist?
Oh, for me personally?
For you personally?
For me personally, David Bowie.
David Bowie?
Yeah.
Oh,
aye.
We lost David Bowie, didn't we, in the
we
last
did.
Year?
We yeah. And I still haven't brought myself to open his last album, which was given to me at that Christmas. He died in the January, to listen to it.
Right,
so.
Okay. So you'd have to get around to that at some point then,
aye,
as well.
At some point. My wife absolutely hates him, so there's not often I do get a chance to listen to his
music. So no David Bowie playing at your house?
Only when she's out.
So, who or what are your inspirations in your career, whether it's people or projects?
I take inspiration literally every day. I know that sounds passé, but I absolutely take inspiration every day from what people do. I guess in terms of my management leadership development over the years, yeah, there have been a couple of folk who have taken some kind of inspiration from that have been mentors to me much earlier in my career, continue to be people that I relate to. And am I supposed to name names here?
Only if you're comfortable.
I'm not. I prefer not to, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know who they are, and they know who they are. But genuinely, I am inspired every day by what my leadership team here in the Health and Social Care Partnership are prepared to do. They're in that place where they are prepared to recognise that we're here to transform the way that health and social care is planned, delivered, received and experienced. I'm inspired by what my fellow chief officers across Scotland are doing on a day-to-day basis in their own respective patches, what we are able to achieve coming together as a collective. Despite the fact that 31 voices is, you know, it's sometimes as the chair of the whole group, it's not easy to get a single view about what we should be about and what we should be striving to do. But nevertheless, some fantastic work is being done on a day-to-day basis. And then I have always made one of the experiences I had working in the voluntary sector is that you're never very far away from frontline provision as a director or a senior leader in the charities. So because you have to go out and do frontline visits, that's how the voluntary sector, as a chief officer, you're able to market what your organisation does. You can only do that if you understand and can tell the stories of the lives of the people that your organisation is supporting. So you go out. So I do that, and I've continued to do that in my 10 years back in the council and every school holiday.
And given the wealth of your frontline experience, what one piece of advice would you give to those working or considering working in social work or social services?
I think the one piece of advice I probably want to give is to recognise that it's not a job. It's not just a job. It genuinely is a vocation. You've got to have that compassion, the right value base, the central component of your characteristic being a giving person who's not judgmental, who's not prone to putting subjectivity and personal into your interactions with people. And those are not easy qualities. And it does require that reflection. I described earlier on, I only got to that place as an adult, a young adult, albeit in my early 20s, at the point that I had fortuitously landed as a CSV in a social work team in Clyde Bank and reflected back on my earlier experiences. So if there is somebody out there thinking about a career in social care, think about what's brought you to that place where you think you might want to do it, and don't see it just as a job. It's got to be something that is a part of you. You've got to have that compassion, those values, and there are huge numbers of people out there who are in that place. Our challenge, I think, is being able to tap into that and encourage people to think, this is something I want to do. And actually, when it comes to people like myself, perhaps inspire somebody at the age of 22, 23, coming out of university in May, June, with a degree in science or a degree in history or whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's not where I thought I would be, but I could be there. And actually in 30 years, because it does take that long, folks, sorry, but in 30 years, and it's not that you start out being ambitious to become a senior leader in the system, that you don't get to that place when you think I've just been really lucky, I have to say.
Well, you've grafted as well.
Hard work, but I have been in the right place at the right time. I've no doubt about that. And that element of putting yourself in outside your comfort zone, and if you don't try something, you'll never get there. So it is about just having a reflection. This isn't a job for the sake of a job. It is, I am going to make a difference to people's lives in a good way.
Sure. Good advice.
Okay.
And finally, if you're cast away in a desert island, Hafid, what's the one thing that you couldn't live without?
Oxygen? No idea. Again, I think social work people tend not to be materialistic. They tend not to. I don't think I am. I suppose a belief in myself, a belief in, a faith or whatever. If people have these things, I have these things, but Oxygen, definitely oxygen.
Okay, I'll give you oxygen then, you can take that with you. Okay, this podcast, as you know, David, is called Freshly Squeezed. So I ask each of my interviewees at the end of the interview, how do you like your juice? Do you like it smooth or with juicy bits?
Both give me horrific heartburn. Probably without bits, if I'm being honest.
Without bits, you like it smooth. Yeah. Smooth it is. Okay. David, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Absolute pleasure.
You've been freshly squeezed.
Thank you for listening to Iris FM, Scotland's social services podcast. Visit iris.fm to download a transcript, listen to more episodes, or subscribe to the podcast feed. This recording is copyright of Iris. It's released under a Creative Commons license, which means it may be copied and reused for non-commercial purposes.